I'm Jason Mansray, and you're listening to the Camden Newscast. In this update, police deem Chalk Farm was not riot affected, classing it as just a disturbance.
If it looked like a riot, smelt like a riot, and sounded like a riot, it probably was a riot.
What do proposed changes to planning mean for the borough of Camden?
So some people are going to gain, others are going to lose, and I think the changes that are being introduced are the wrong ones.
Who is monitoring stop and searches in the borough?
It's a great tool for the police. And I do strongly believe that it's a great tool for the community.
Camden Education Commission publishes its interim report.
Everyone was agreed that things are changing.
A new book on Palestinian political prisoners in Israel.
Rather, the imprisonment is used as a means for excluding the Palestinians from their political daily life.
And Hampstead Women's Football Club have been promoted to a high division.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's going to be tough, but it's exciting. Going into bigger things. Should be good fun.
The 6th to the 10th of August saw seven London boroughs, including Camden, erupt in riots. Vehicles, homes and shops were attacked and set alight, with losses in London estimated in the region of £100 million. But local businesses in Chalk Farm and Camden Town are being frozen out of making compensation claims. I spoke to Holborn and St Pancras MP Frank Dobson to find out more.
The situation has been since the 19th century that if there is a riot and people haven't insurance or are underinsured, then damage to their premises can be the subject of compensation by, in our case, the Metropolitan Police. And I was aware of this, and on the day that Parliament was recalled, when the Home Secretary was speaking, one Tory MP asked her why no one had been prosecuted for riot, and she sort of explained that, well, that was to do with the complexities of it, and in any case those sort of decisions weren't made by her but were made by the Director of Public Prosecutions. Quite true. But I then got up and said, well, I hoped she'd make sure that if the fact that nobody had been prosecuted for riot wouldn't be used by the Metropolitan Police to weasel their way out of paying the compensation for riot damage. And then, lo and behold, shortly after, and she said yes, she would give that guarantee, and then lo and behold, shortly afterwards, it turns out that in Camden, people are being told, sorry, it wasn't a riot, it was just disorder. But my view is, if it looked like a riot, smelt like a riot, and sounded like a riot, it probably was a riot.
As you said, compensation comes from the Metropolitan Police. Do you think, you mentioned weaseling out, but do you think that is perhaps why police are so keen to class it as a disorder, simply to avoid this compensation?
Well, that's a probable explanation, but the Home Secretary's got an easy answer to that. She could say she would reimburse the Metropolitan Police, or indeed other police forces, for any compensation that took.
I want to revisit, you were saying that in the Houses of Parliament you did get a confirmation that compensation would come. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Well, it was simply that in response to my question, the Home Secretary said, I think I can give that right honourable gentleman that guarantee.
And that's Theresa May?
Yep.
Said that she could give you that guarantee.
She said she thought she could, but I mean, that's the sort of word you use when you say you're saying yes, isn't it?
So does that mean that the affected Chalk Farm businesses, for example, we might go without money? And I guess what is the big implications and issues there?
Well, if they're not insured, and if they were, or if they're underinsured, and they were relying on the riot damages compensation, they'll be short of money.
The property industry is welcoming proposed changes to planning, but what does it mean for the people in Camden? With private rents getting higher, where does social housing fit into the new framework? Sarah O'Brien spoke with Michael Edwards from the Bartlett School of Planning.
What do you see being the biggest impact of these changes?
Well, I think for London, the prospects are miserable. In London, which is a very, very unequal city with very expensive housing, the combined effect of all the changes that are already in the pipeline or proposed will be to make the housing conditions confronting low-income and middle-income people even worse than they are now. It may do something to improve the housing prospects for people at the top of the income scale, but that was never a great problem. So I'm very pessimistic. I also think that it's very clear from a lot of people's research that it's going to increase the social segregation in London. One of the things which many people value about London is that in most parts of London, even in Kensington and Chelsea and Westminster, you still have some quite mixed communities. Old people and young people, different income groups, some residual council housing. That's a feature of London, very different from Paris, say, very different from many cities which are very segregated. London is really quite relatively mixed. And it looks as though the way things are going, we shall get far more segregation, with low-income people being squeezed out more and more, an accelerated version of what we've had already for the last 10 or 20 years. And that will affect places like Camden, Islington, North Kensington, North Westminster, really, I think, very strongly.
Is there a need to change current planning legislation? A lot of people, well, the way it's being sold in terms of residential changes, it will make the process easier and therefore people's simple conversions will be made easier, but obviously it's a much wider issue than that.
Well, yes, I think that there is need for change, but in my opinion, not these changes.
Right.
There's need for change because in Britain we've got a really appalling housing situation in which housing is very unaffordable to large parts of the population. It's a population with more and more inequality of income and wealth, and low and middle income people in Britain have appalling problems in housing themselves satisfactorily, especially in London and the southeast of England, but in the whole country. So nobody's arguing that everything is okay. However, the changes which are being introduced, I think, are going to perhaps improve things for people in the middle income and high income groups by perhaps somewhat improving the supply of private housing for sale, particularly in the more luxury markets. Mm-hmm. But conditions are going to get substantially worse for low income people. And in London, there are a lot of people whose incomes will never be enough for them to buy housing. They will always be renting. Most of them need social housing, council housing. There are a lot of people who are having to live in privately rented housing, and the rents are high and rising. And that's been possible for many people because they could claim housing benefit to supplement their low pay. But that's been cut back as well, with big limits being imposed progressively on housing benefit payments. So there are large numbers, many tens of thousands of people in London, who look as though they won't be able to afford to continue living in London with the changes that are being introduced. They're going to allow councils and housing associations to increase their rents to levels up to 80% of the private landlord's market rent in their area, which in London could mean doubling, trebling, quadrupling of rents, depending where you are, because that will give a lot of extra revenue coming in to these housing providers, which they can then use to build, or they can use it in order to borrow money to finance the building of more units. So that's basically the strategy which the government is adopting. And if the councils and the housing associations decide to go ahead with this thing, which they are very tempted to do, they'll be able to house a progressively richer section of the population at these new higher rents and use the money they get to buy or build more housing. But it's really going to put the squeeze on the production of low rent, really affordable housing for people on low and middle incomes.
And I caught up with Camden Council's Sue Vincent.
This is a big issue. I mean, it's offset that the default answer to proposals is yes.
That's
now,
correct.
If you do that, I mean, that is directly undermining a local authority.
It is, absolutely, and also goes totally against the grain of having local people involved at a local level. Government are proposing that only affordable housing that has an 80% market rent is funded and subsidised. Now, that will make a big impact in a London borough like Camden, but across London.
How does Camden actually decide how much housing to create at the moment? And also, especially, how much of it will be social rented housing?
Okay, that comes from our policy of looking we're looking at viability of particular and individual planning applications. But our overarching policy says 50% affordable.
The big thing that we have to look at, though, is how do you define affordable housing? Because most people don't realise that affordable housing is based on an income of £50,000 per year. That's not social housing. That is not the lower income spectrum being catered for.
No, it isn't. And there is a range of affordable housing types that you can have within that. There are part rent, part purchase units that would come along as well as the affordable.
What percentage of that is social housing, rented housing for these carers, for instance?
Yeah, well, that's a mix between, say, 60 to 70% affordable and 40 to 30% what we would call step, so part rent, part buy. You try to get a range from what we would call council housing, RSLs, registered social landlords, the housing associations, and those as well offer that part rent, part buy to completely private. So it's a stepped approach so that there is a section of people, cross-section of people that can afford to live in a given area.
Finally, the draft National Planning Policy Framework consultation will close on the 17th of October this year, 2011. Councillor Vincent, what issues will you be highlighting or do you think the Borough of Camden will be highlighting perhaps before that consultation closes?
I think we'll be raising issues around the affordability of housing. We certainly will be looking at areas of planning consents and in particular the issue around the presumption to approve. We're very concerned at that and also sustainable development. There has been no clarification what sustainable development means, and I think we need to really bore down to find out what the government thinks it is suggesting that we give approval to.
Yep. And when you said affordable housing, I mean, you're including social rented housing in that as well?
Yes, of course, of course. It's a really big factor of the quality of people's lives.
And Camden Council will be challenging on the aforementioned?
Yes, of course we will be challenging on the aforementioned, but I'm sure lots of other London boroughs will be as well.
Post-London Rights, there is a growing resentment towards the use of stop and searches in Camden. Whilst many in the borough have praised its use over the years, there is a fear that in some cases it has caused resentment from ethnic minorities. So, who is monitoring its use in the borough? I spoke with Detective Superintendent Neil Wilson to find out a bit more.
A lot of people are asking, well, who's checking? Who's, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's to make sure that abuses aren't happening, which, as you have been, you know, very humble to admit, does happen.
Yeah, and it's a good question, and we've got to be held to account because there is a self-inspection process. So here at Camden, we have two inspectors. Now, the majority of searches take place by constables. They are supervised by sergeants, and then there's a layer of management and supervision at an inspector level. We have two here, Inspector Burton and Inspector O'Connor. Inspector Burton works within the professional standards unit here, discipline and complaints by members of the public. And Inspector O'Connor works with our youth violence team, and he's in charge of that unit. And they monitor all stop and search records.
We have to look into it that statistically most people stopped are black or Asian. Now, it is very easy for someone to say that's talking about harassment of a certain sector of the community. And I mean, I'm just hoping that you might have an explanation to that, you know, an alternative.
Well, I'm not sure about the assertion that most people who are stopped are black and Asian. I haven't got the figures with me, which is a little shameful, but they are available, so you can look at those. Certainly what we do look at, and what Andy and Danny, the two inspectors, look at, is the demographic of Camden, and how we're the breaking down of our minority ethnic backgrounds, the colour of our skin, and so on. And they don't rely on the census, because of course the census is not accurate data, so they rely on schools data just to look at the percentage of people from black and minority ethnic groups on the borough, and then they compare that to the stop and search data that we have. If there is disproportionality, we need a commentary. Now, it has to be true that if we have a series of offences in a particular area committed by a particular age group or a particular group of people who happen to be white males, who happen to be Asian or who happen to be black, if those offences are happening in a particular area, that will contribute, but only be a contributor, to the reasonable grounds to stop and search. So if we're searching for people for stolen property from burglaries, and we know that these are young people aged between 16 and 21 who are white, that may be then part of the grounds for the stop. If we're searching for people who are table surfing in Bloomsbury, I know that that is often done by organised groups of Eastern Europeans, and so that group of people will be part of the equation for the reasonable grounds. Not just the colour of their skin, not just, but it is a contributor. Because if I'm looking for a young black man who has just stolen someone's purse, snatched it, or robbed that purse, I cannot stop a young white man. Not for that snatch. I'm not stopping him because of the colour of his skin in isolation. It is a contributor to many other factors. That's the delicateness of stop and search.
Marion Larrigie reports on the Camden Education Commission interim report.
Camden Education Commission has just published its interim report. The commission was set up in May to look at issues for Camden Education going forward, chaired by Sir Ian Tomlinson, a former inspector of schools who led the review of education for 14 to 19-year-olds. The report identifies the issues which will need to be tackled if every Camden child is to get a good education. Everyone was agreed that things are changing, and there's some consensus as to the role the local authority ought to play in the future. The local authority has a role as a champion, as an enabler, as a broker in relation to standards and for ongoing governance. Alongside changing structures, transitions, school choices for boys at second level, equalities in education, the needs of disabled children, and access to university for the less well-off young people are amongst the problems to be tackled. Now the Commission wants to hear from anyone who has ideas to contribute on how to go forward. To download a copy of the interim report or to give your views on the next phase of the report, go to www.gov.uk and Google Camden Education Commission.
And that website is actually www.camden.gov.uk. Our reporter Fiona Wright reports on a political book launch.
Correct. A new book about Palestinian political prisoners in Israel was launched this week at the YMCA in Camden. I'm Fiona Wright. I was there and talked with Abir Bakr, a Palestinian human rights lawyer, about Palestinian political prisoners being held in Israel. Abir explained that the imprisonment of Palestinians who are held in harsh conditions and often without being tried or convicted for any offence, is a central issue in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but one which we rarely hear about. Since Israel occupied the West Bank and Gaza Strip territories, up to 1 in 4 Palestinian men have been detained in Israeli prison at some point in their lives.
Well, almost each family experienced imprisonment in its life, each Palestinian family. And it's also one of the issues that we are touching in our book. And we're saying that massive imprisonment, it's not being done because you have millions of criminals. Rather, it is being done to serve and to fulfill a political will of Israel.
You can hear the full interview as a podcast on the Camden Community Radio website.
Turns out 2011 is proving to be a good year for women's football in England and in our borough, with the Hampstead Women's Football Club being promoted. If, like me, you don't know much about the women's game, well, the Football Association has launched the Women's Super League, the new elite summer league for women's football, followed by the Women's Premier League National Division, with relegation to two equal leagues, the Northern and the Southern Divisions. Below this is the four combination leagues, that's South West, South East, Midland and Northern. Now that Hampstead are only four divisions from the Super League, I popped into a training session to say hello.
My name's Rebecca Barnes, I'm 24 and I'm a PE teacher at secondary school.
Hey, I noticed that your t-shirt says Simply the Bex.
I was the leading goal scorer this year, I got 26 goals, so the team bought me this t-shirt as like a present for being the highest goal scorer.
Well, fantastic news. Now, how do you feel about the fact that you guys have moved up a division?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's going to be tough, but it's exciting. Going into bigger things should be good fun.
As his head coach, what does he think might be the secret to at least some of their success? It's interesting, the year that you started coaching is the year that they went up a division. Do you think that's directly related?
I hope so, yeah. I've been told by the general manager in here that they want to get promoters as well. So that's why I came, basically. And I'm ready for the challenge, a new challenge for me. Yeah.
No, I mean, Eddie, there is a big challenge because you're playing against like Luton Town and Brentford. Are you worried?
No, at all. I'm not worried because we have a good team. Good players.
One thing I certainly enjoyed was the huge personalities that make up the team.
Hi, hello, my name is Valentina, I'm from Italy. I'm not really good with the referees. I'm really loud with them because I think I'm Italian, I'm always complaining and diving.
See, so you don't always see eye to eye with the umpires?
No, mostly no.
Kate, or they call me Frio. I'm 30 years old and I like to think I am the DJ, I'd say that. I've actually been working in the build-up to this season on the 2011-12 playlist for the changing rooms. I've got my little iPod speakers and my iPod playlist going.
So if we were going to say the soundtrack to Hampstead Women's Football Club or the song, what would it be?
Well, there is one song that stands out that we all know and love and have obviously made our own words to, and it's Jay-Z, Empire State of Mind. We have a Hampstead version of that.
Do you think you can give me just a little bit of a rendition?
Ooh.
Come on.
Heath Extension, Where Dreams Are Made Of, because we play at the Heath Extension. JB will inspire you, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to sing because I can't sing. But yeah, JB's our gaffer, so we've worked him into the song as well. So, but yeah, just the chorus, we made up our own words.
What do they think of women's football today? Claire Lewis is heavily involved in the sport.
Back in 2006, the FA got me involved in their Get Into Football campaign, which was 10 people across the country, spearheaded by two professionals, Michael Owen and Enya Luca at the time, and then 8 grassroots members of the community who were involved in football in some either small or large piece. A couple of years later, I stayed in contact with the FA. They were delighted with some of the work I'd done at the community level, and they rewarded me with an ambassadorial role. And it's always frustrated me that girls, after prep school, going to university, they stop doing their team sports, they choose the pub instead of the gym, and then also after university, they just perhaps get lazy, or there's some simple barriers in the way that stop them going out and staying active and fit.
Hi, my name's Mo Gray. During the day, I work at the BBC in science factual television production. I'm 25 years old, and I play central defence. I guess I would be the token American.
Fantastic. Now, tell me, women's football sort of has had a sort of increase over the last 20 years, getting more and more popular. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Yeah, oh yes, definitely. I mean, on both sides of the ocean, really, back in America, it's huge. And it's getting even bigger over here every year. See more and more women playing football, it's great.
But there's a huge disparity.
Well, I think part of the problem is, well, not necessarily part of the problem, but the men's game here is so big, and it's been so big for so many years that I think a lot of the fans just tend to follow men more than women. But hopefully that's going to change as more women get involved in the sport.
And you sprint.
Now, this is the highest rank in the club has had in its 14-year history. Do you think it's going to take 14 years to get to the Super League?
No. If I stay with them, it doesn't.
And what do you think about women's football as a whole?
When I started it first, I was a bit shocked, to be very honest. And then I got used to it. It's nice. It's not bad. It's not bad. And they have the passion for it, as AJ and guys.
What do you find different?
They listen more. And they are nice. But they do it, honestly.
The good thing to see is that there's almost as many girls as there is boys playing on the field. And their skill levels are pretty much equal too. So on this occasion, I definitely wouldn't mind being told I kicked like a girl.
This is Camden Community Newscast. Our next update will be in 2 weeks' time.